everyone. I think we'll go ahead and get started then. So I'm Sadie Ward. I'll be kind of walking us through this intro to set design, seminar, workshop, whatever you want to call it. I'm on the board of directors here at Theater in the Round. I've been volunteering here for about 10 years, which is kind of mind-blowing to me that I've like gotten to like a 10-year milestone somehow at some place. I've also done a lot of different tech work here at Theater in the Round. I started doing like board op stuff and doing electrics and just basic paint calls and stuff like that. And then I kind of built my way up and I'm kind of a regular set designer here. I do some freelance work around town as well. So my experience kind of comes from kind of the immediate area. So I'll be talking at you. This is kind of an informal presentation, so do feel free to kind of like interrupt or raise your hand throughout, but at the end we'll definitely open it up for any kind of general questions that you may have. So what we're kind of looking at here, we're gonna talk a little bit about script analysis, the relationship with director and other designers, general paperwork, furniture and set decor, and safety and theater policies, which is like super on my mind right now because my day job is in HR and I just was at a safety conference this week, so that's like very present on my mind. So as I mentioned, I'm Sadie Ward. I double majored in theater studies and arts administration at Viterbo University because I really kind of wanted that balance of the artistic and the admin, and I think I'm still pulling it off so far. So I know, you know, kind of a little bit about everything about the theater. So if you're interested in other things in addition to set design, come ask me questions. So I do freelance set and props design work, and then my day job is in HR at the Guthrie. So what is set design? So we'll just start with the big, broad, kind of open question. Set design is just kind of one kind of term that you could use. It's also referred to as scenic design, stage design. If you're going a little old school, maybe scenography is a word that you'll hear come up every once in a while. And I kind of, when I think of set design, I do call it set design personally, I think of it as the creation of the location or atmosphere that supports the storytelling of a play or musical. Because when you look at the history of set design, which is a very fascinating and like specific kind of history to look into, sets, like way back when theater was just like being started as an idea, were just kind of generic. They weren't very specific to the show. If you did an opera and it was in the forest, you just had your generic forest scene, and it didn't like, you know, I don't want to say it didn't add much, but nowadays when we think of set design, we really think of it as, you know, any design element really as really adding to the specific mood and feel and storytelling of that show. So that's one of the reasons that I love set design, is I feel like I'm creating this world that this play or story can take place in. The set designer collaborates with all other designers to create a cohesive environment while generating technical paperwork for the execution of the design. Because you can have all kinds of great ideas, but if you can't execute, that's kind of a pinch point there. I've got a couple self-mantras that I kind of, as a designer myself, kind of carry with myself. And I think it's always important to know what are your personal strengths and what are your personal weaknesses. What are the phrases that you keep coming back to that kind of continue to motivate you and inspire you? Because not every set designer is the same. I'll be very upfront with people and be like, abstract is not my strength. I'm really good at like historical realism. So when I take on like an abstract show myself, I know that I need to like maybe allow a little bit more creative time with it. So I think it's important that as you start thinking of set design is to really think of, you know, yourself, what are your strengths, what are things you want to work on, and why do you want to work on those? So everyone has different strengths as a designer. I always like to think of a personal mission statement. That's partly because I like work in HR and I look at resumes a lot during the day. But I know like for myself, I personally really like using recycled materials in stock when I can. And that's not for everyone, and that's not for every theater, and that's not for every story. But when you're sitting there trying to, you know, create start that relationship with a director, those are the things that you know about yourself that, you know, oh my gosh, if this is a show where I get to, you know, use a recycled deck, that's awesome. But if it's, you know, maybe not that show, then you're playing on other skill sets and creative powers that you have as well. One of my favorite quotes is also from art history that I took in college. It's far better to have an imperfect dome in Florence than the cathedral in the clouds, referring to the dome in Florence, because that was, you know, Brunelleschi, like, having all these brilliant ideas, but then eventually he had to kind of, like, put the idea to paper, right? And for me, that is, like, such a great, that's architecture, so there's kind of, like, a direct relationship in some ways between architecture and set design, but for me, that's such a great example of, like, taking those, like, great creative and ideas, but then how do I turn around and, like, decide what floor to paint? That's kind of, like, one kind of quote that I kind of always keep telling myself if I ever feel like I'm, like, stuck creatively. So those are the kinds of things that, as you develop your skills more, those are the kinds of things you want to be thinking of. I also like to touch base a little bit on the idea of design versus art. So there's, again, this is kind of a personal thing for, you to decide in a certain way, but I kind of think of design is a series of decisions to make to, again, help tell the most, you know, create the best environment for this story. Art, I just kind of do. That I do in my free time. Being artistic helps being a designer, but thinking of them as two different things can kind of help you sometimes when you're thinking of yourself as a designer, because you may have this really great idea, but if the director says, no, that's not within my vision, you've got to help make that decision then to support that director's decision. So there's a lot of documentaries out there about design and art. I love watching, like, documentaries about modern art because it's, like, a realm of art that I just don't understand at all. But it's, like, watching stuff like that helps me understand my own processes better at the same time. So just to kind of reiterate, design is to create fashion, execute, or construct according to a plan. So you're also catching on that I've got that strong execution part in there. Any questions about that we've covered so far? Okay, great. So we're just going to kind of cover a couple basics. I'm not sure, has anyone had experience doing set design before? Some yes, some no? Okay, so we got a good mix to the room. So we're just going to kind of cover some of these things. So there's a couple different types of stages. There's proscenium, thrust, arena, and black box. Broadly speaking, there's also, like, found spaces, which is its own little fun kind of area of fun. But a proscenium, that's when you're, like, in a theater and it's got that very specific frame around it. So when you're designing for a proscenium, you're designing more for, like, a picture frame. It's a little bit more kind of like thinking of, like, a movie in some sense. Then there's the thrust, which is when the stage thrusts out into the audience. So there you've got your proscenium generally, but then you've also got, you know, area that's sticking out into the audience. And then you have something like the arena, which we're in right now, which is like 360. And the principles for set design are the same in all of these things, but there's different considerations for each of them, such as sight lines, again, thinking of things in that kind of flat picture, whereas here you have to think in 3D. And then there's also black boxes, which are very configurable. Black boxes are unique in that you sometimes have the opportunity to also define what your seating arrangement looks like. Like, that's just not a consideration when I'm designing in a space where the seats are bolted to the floor. But whenever I get a show that's a black box show, the first question I ask is, am I deciding where the seats go, or is someone deciding that for me? So a lot of the skill sets are, you know, the same for a lot of these different areas, but they just kind of, you need to be aware of different things as you're going into different spaces. And then there's different kinds of sets as well that can fit into this configuration of stages in a variety of different ways. There's unit sets, box sets, wagon sets, conceptual sets, historical sets. Those are all just kind of terms to kind of categorize things. Like a conceptual set would be a little bit more kind of stylized or abstract, or you know, when you have something that's conceptualized, you've got to make sure that you, all of the designers are all on the same page so that, you know, if you're creating this world, something doesn't, like, stick out and it's really distracting and takes away from the show. A historical set, maybe a little bit like this one that we're standing on right now. You know, it's a different kind of process. You're doing more historical research, different things like that. So set designers really have a huge range of skills to be able to design in all these different spaces, design these different kinds of sets. Like I said, different people will have different strengths, and that is awesome that you can recognize those things. So yeah, any questions about that? Okay. I also like to highlight transferable skills that come from being a set designer. Because when you think of set design, you usually think of being like in a theater like this, right? When one of my first jobs out of college was actually at a company called V Corporation that produced Sesame Street Live. And they actually, so they like 2 to 3 months of the year, they produce like the Sesame Street Live shows. And then the other 9, 10 months of the year, they were a production company. And this was like this eye-opening experience for me to suddenly see like, oh my God, all these skills that I learned in the theater are transferable to like profit companies. How fascinating. So that's just, you know, depending on kind of what your interest is in set design, if you want to do it kind of as a fun hobby, if you want to try and make a career of it, you know, really thinking, you know, beyond just set design is an important thing to kind of consider if you are trying to think of it as a career. Because there's production design, museum design, interior design. Devin, who's the designer for this set, his background is actually in interior design, and he has come to set design because he's got all the skills. There's slightly different, like, terminology, but all the basic skills are there. So those are some things that I just kind of want to like point out if it's something that you're genuinely trying to like think of in a career beyond just being in the theater. So since we're in the round, I do like to kind of highlight a couple of things that are very specific to the round since we are like literally in this space. And this is kind of how you kind of develop some of those critical thinking skills in set design of being able to walk into a space and really start to pick up on what do I need to think of as I'm designing this show, as I'm making these decisions. So like, for example, generally in the round, you're gonna have lower walls. Your sight lines are different. When I use the term sight line, does everyone know what I mean? Lots of nods, okay, yes. So like here, your sight lines, you know, are, you know, kind of dimensionally kind of oriented, whereas in a proscenium, it's a very kind of straight line kind of sight line situation. Designing in the rounds, when you're the set designer, you talk a lot with the director about blocking and blocking patterns. So you think of blocking differently when you're placing furniture and stuff out. So you tend to think in diagonals a little bit more. Here in the round, you're going to think, you know, this is a diagonal, this is a diagonal, this is a diagonal. Whereas in proscenium, you think of it, you know, how people move about the space very differently because you're thinking in that flat kind of plane kind of appearance. Here in the round, ceiling pieces are a big part. We've got a nice, beautiful ceiling ornament right here. I've seen a huge range of different kind of ceiling pieces like in this space, but that's just another example of like, you probably wouldn't care as much about ceiling pieces in like a proscenium show because it gives it a different feel when you're the audience literally like walking under it versus like in a proscenium where you're just watching it. So the thing that I always kind of keep in mind when I'm designing in the round is that idea of atmosphere versus designing in a picture frame. And atmosphere is something that conveys as well for proscenium shows, but when your audience is literally walking across the stage, walking through the atmosphere that you've developed, it's a slightly different kind of process to like think of, you know, okay, someone who hasn't read this script, when they walk across the stage and see it for the first time, what's that immediate kind of impact that it's going to give compared to maybe a proscenium show where you're looking at a curtain that's down for the first chunk of time. So just kind of a couple of examples of how you think differently, but kind of ask the same questions of yourself depending on where you kind of what space you're in. Any questions about any of that? I talk with my hands a lot. I started as an actor at one point. Sometimes I think it shows. So who will you work with? Everyone. So we've got the director that you're generally going to almost always start with first. Every theater is a little different in terms of like how you as a designer get involved in the process. Here at Theater in the Round, we have Tony, who's the volunteer coordinator. If you're at, you know, Park Square in St. Paul, you might be working with the artistic director or a production manager to get involved in the process. Different theaters have different kind of processes of kind of matching designers and directors together. Some theaters say, here's your set designer, go! And then there's other theaters where the director has more of their kind of own kind of interview process. So that's kind of a mix of every theater is a little different with their process, but then also keeping in mind your strengths as a designer. You know, that's kind of part of like making sure you're being fit for the right production with the right director. After director, your technical director is a pretty important person that you're gonna get to know through your process. And so a director like gives you the direction of the show, in case that wasn't clear. Like, they say, we want this set in black and white, go. Great, we'll work with that. Then your technical director is a very important person. They are the person that is responsible in helping you realize your design. You have to think of that truly as a collaboration, because there's a lot of communication that if you fail as a designer of communicating that to the technical director, that is just as much on you, you know, if not more so, for not being able to communicate your ideas as a designer to help that technical director do the best job that they can. Because you've got complementary skills, but you need to make sure that you have the communication skills to make sure that those bridge together. Because I know I've definitely like done a drafting and I've been like, ah, they'll figure it out, and then it's built and I'm like, whoa, okay, noted, I should have put a note on that drafting plate because that got built in a way that I did not think it would be interpreted that way. So generally the clearer that you can be, you know, with your technical director in all the different ways that you communicate with them, that's verbally, email, you know, your drafting templates, paint elevations. Here at Theater in the Round, we have just a technical director, but depending on like the size of theater you're at, there may be a hierarchy kind of within that kind of realm of technical direction, or like just the scene shop in general, that you want to be conscious of as well. If you have a technical director and a carpenter, you know, that's kind of a different kind of ball game in some ways if you also have someone who's just building stuff. And I think that that's really important, you know, to keep in mind, again, with that idea of design. You're making decisions that are within the realm of possibility to best support the story. If you have just one technical director who's like kind of the whole kit and caboodle of your scene shop, you don't want to design this like huge set that they just can't build, because you're kind of like setting yourself up for failure in a way. So you want to make sure the scope of it stays within the realm of possibility. So that's always something that, you know, as you're especially going to a new theater, or maybe if you're a theater kind of bringing in a new designer, those are kinds of things you want to be upfront with. Like, this person works 40 hours a week. Whatever you design has to be built within that scale. That kind of a stuff. Love technical directors. They're some of my favorite people. They get a lot of stuff done in like a remarkable time frame. They're great. Then there's the stage manager. The stage manager is really the communication glue for an entire production. Stage manager is first in, last out of a production. They're generally gonna be there to, you know, unlock the door, make sure everyone gets out, and then locks the door. My relationship as a set designer to a stage manager kind of varies depending on the show. Broadly speaking, that it varies in how complex the set is. For something that's like a British living room where the set doesn't change, I'm gonna be like, I like you, thank you, and that's going to be kind of, here's the ground plan, here's the furniture. That's kind of the extent of what that is, because that's what the production is asking for. But if you've got shows, which I've definitely designed before, where you've got moving elements the whole time, you're going to be talking with that stage manager every single day, and you're going to want to be checking in with them a lot to make sure that your vision is, like, supporting the story again as well, right? Because, like, what if you have this idea, they're doing it in rehearsal, it's just not working. You go in and you're like, oh, well, you're using it like this, and I need you to use it like that. You know, those are the kinds of things that you need to really stay connected with your stage manager for. Furniture is a big thing between, like, the set designer and the stage manager that gets talked about a lot. This chair broke. Can we get another one? Put set designer there. That's a little redundant. Costume, lighting. I left props off. Bobby, you can judge me for this.
I already did.
Okay, great. Just, like, cross out set and, like, I usually think of my prop, costume, and lighting designer as generally, like, when you're walking into a production, those are the three other designers that you're definitely probably going to have with you. There's also projection designers, you know, there's composers in some kind of production, where I'm really impressed at Theater in the Round the number of sound designers that we have compose music here. Like, we get through Tech Week, I'm like, holy, oh my god, you actually, like, wrote that yourself. I'm blown away every time. But the prop, costume, and lighting designers are kind of the team that compose the visual world together. So you need to make sure that you are all on the same page together. Because if one of you says, I think the color palette should be pastels, and the other says, I think it should be jewel tones, that's just going to look like a mess. No one wants that. Hopefully your director is, you know, pointing you in the right direction. But there's been some productions where, you know, you will have just conversations. I know, like, depending on what the needs of it are, I've got a show actually coming up at Park Square where there's a couple, I'm doing props for it, and there's a couple props that are like, is this a prop or is it a costume? And then there's some things where I'm like, is this a prop or is it a set? So sometimes you have those side conversations with your designers because they're kind of your peers that way. Each designer has kind of a different kind of rhythm and a different cadence as a production rolls out. Generally, the set designer kind of does a lot of their work up front and kind of like, here's the model, and then kind of the other kind of pieces kind of come to that. Just kind of generally, props are a little bit later. They get a lot more information out of rehearsal. So every design element kind of has its different like rhythm to it. Lighting, kind of a similar way. You have to kind of wait for a rehearsal to watch rehearsal and see the shape of it before you can really say the light should go there because they're doing that over there. So designers are definitely people that you work with a lot. Actors and run crew kind of depending on the theater that you're at and also the needs of the production. It's really common at Theater in the Round here that I'll just go up to an actor and be like, what's up with that couch? Or, you know, something seems to not work. Can you just, like, tell me what it is? Certain theaters where you maybe are working with unions, you can't do that. You want to make sure that you kind of understand some of those working relationships. Like at Park Square when you're working with union actors, you know, that's going to go through the stage manager and director. If I'm going to go talk to an actor, I'm going to be like, are you okay if I just go ask him directly? Because, you know, they want to make sure that, you know, everything is within, you know, the laid out kind of work expectations. Any questions about who you work with, how that works, that kind of stuff? Production meetings. Everyone loves meetings, right? Does everyone know what a production meeting is when I use that term? Lots of nods, good things. So production meetings are really your chance where your relationship with costume, set, lights, and props really come together. Again, just making sure that you do all have that opportunity where you all sit in a room together and talk about stuff. I've done some productions where, you know, everyone's working on like 13 projects. So like, it's maybe like Tech Week by the time you're like all in the room together and you're like, wow, that's magical that actually worked. Because we haven't been in a room together until now. But production meetings really help troubleshoot a lot of questions, especially if you have kind of a demanding production that maybe has a lot of elements to it. like murder mysteries kind of come to mind when there's like maybe tricks on stage, or you've got to like guns and fire are always a big thing at a production meeting. Like anytime I read a script where I'm like, God, there's a gun, I'm like, oh great, we're gonna have to talk about this gun for like 20 minutes at a production meeting. Is it real? Do we want a cap gun? Should it just be a sound effect? Every time. The other thing with production meetings to develop, not only as a set designer, but any designer, is knowing what questions to ask. And a certain amount of this kind of comes from script analysis of reading the script and saying, oh, you know, good example, is this more of a prop or is this more of a set thing? But it also comes a little bit with experience as well. So sometimes you don't always know the question to ask when you're getting started, because you need some of those experiences to be like, oh, that happened that one time, I better ask this time about this. But really, it's, you know, not hesitating and asking questions. I felt when I was younger, a younger designer, I was always like, if I ask questions, it shows that I don't know stuff. But really, you want to get those questions out there because you want to troubleshoot that stuff up front. You don't want to get to tech week and then be like, okay, that didn't work out, or whatever it is. So script analysis. So I know for myself, I generally have a rule that I don't take on a show without first reading it. And that's a rule that I make for myself as a designer. Because I want to be able to do all my analysis to really understand what I'm getting into before I say yes. Because there's been a couple instances where I say yes and then I read the script and I'm like, oh my God, what did I just say yes to? And that script analysis, it kind of varies kind of depending on your own kind of personal organizational preferences. But it also kind of depends on the show as well. So I, in general, always do kind of like a scene breakdown. Depending on how detailed it is, kind of depends on kind of the production. Like if I know it's going to be a British living room, I'm probably not going to have, you know, a line by line tracking like, okay, we need this piece of scenery over here, we need that furniture over here. You know, it's just kind of not needed if the couch is just going to be a couch and just going to stay there for 4 weeks. But kind of the things that you really want to pay attention to when you're doing scene breakdown work, critical entrances and exits, you know, because that's really going to establish, you know, kind of the broad strokes of your set. One really good example is like Noises Off. Like that's a show about doors. Like you can't mess up the doors in that, otherwise the whole thing is off. But you know, critical entrances and exits, sometimes it's reading the script and being like, huh, we're doing this in the round. They have a very specific like French door reference. Like you know, that's something that you bring to the director and the designer and be like, okay, this is referenced in the script. Are we actually doing it this way? You know, how critical is that to the, like the telling of the story, the vision that the director has? So it's amazing how much just tracking like people coming in and out of a room informs a lot of like the shape of the room. Page lengths of scenes is something that I always kind of take note of. Because if you've got scenes that are, you know, 1 to 3 pages and that script just moves along, that's going to give you just kind of in a quantitative way a way to really like look at your script and the structure of it to say like, okay, this scene, you know, these scenes just move along. So that's just something that I kind of personally kind of keep track of as a way to kind of formalize my thinking. And then any references to the set within the lines of the script I also take note of too. If they say, oh, that beautiful wood floor, well, you don't want to not have a wood floor. And then a furniture list is always important from script analysis. Sometimes you'll start with one after reading the script, go to your meeting with the director, and they say, no, I want none of that. I just want rehearsal cubes. So that's just something you want to kind of keep kind of control of while you're doing that. Any questions about script analysis? So in addition to some of that kind of script analysis that you do, which is kind of a little bit more for your organizational purposes in some ways, there's other paperwork or what I, sometimes when I'm like, ugh, paperwork, I hate paperwork, I tell myself it's a communication tool and then I get a little bit more excited about it because it makes me feel less like I'm like checking something off a list. Generally speaking, for set design, you're going to be looking at a ground plan for like any production that you do. because like they need that ground plan to be able to go into rehearsal and start blocking stuff off. So a ground plan is that really that kind of top-down look at the stage, whether it's arena, proscenium, thrust, whatever it is, you're almost always going to have a ground plan. Elevations, that's where you do kind of like just front shots. I've got a couple pictures that's coming up here too. They kind of just, if you take that piece of scenery and just look at it head on, like if I were to take this little wall right here, an elevation would be like just of the front part of this, so that it's like, this is what it looks like head on. Even if the audience doesn't see it face first, if you're giving it to a painter, they need to know what it looks like, and then you place it on the stage there. Models are really great communication tools as well. I find models to be extremely helpful, especially if you have a director that maybe doesn't quite have all the visualization skills. Because there's some directors that maybe have a design background and you can be like, oh yeah, it'll be like blah, 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 blah. And then you're like, great, we got it. And then there's some directors where I'm like, I just have no idea what you're even talking about. So it's just easier to have a model to literally be like, this is what it's going to look like. So some shows, a model is a little bit more critical than others. I did Noises Off at Lakeshore Players. Model was critical in that because we needed to like literally map out in scale how that set moved around. So models are also really helpful for actors in the rehearsal room as well, so that they kind of understand the world that they're living in. Renderings are really important. Renderings are a little different from elevations in that renderings, in my mind, kind of capture like the feel or the atmosphere that you're kind of going for with the show. Whereas like a ground plan and elevation are like kind of technical things. Like it is 8 feet by 2 foot 4 inches. Whereas a rendering, you're kind of like capturing the spirit or the mood of something. So that's a little bit more when you're thinking like art. That's a little bit more of like kind of what a rendering does. And then I really like furniture lists, so you just got to make sure you've got that furniture list in there. Any questions about paperwork? So this is an example of a ground plan. So it kind of, you know, it depends on the company that you're working for. You can see that this one is a little bit simpler, just kind of spacing it out. You kind of see what that looks like. Whereas something like this, this is very complex. You've got mindsets, you've got things overhead. Broadly speaking, this is a little bit more kind of like TRP. This is a little bit more like Park Square Guthrie kind of stuff. Because, you know, bigger spaces, more scenery, more detail are kind of needed. So there are like formal like drafting conventions out there. You can Google that stuff, you can find it. I know as a designer, one of my strengths is not drafting. So that's one of the reasons I like models so much, is that helps me communicate my ideas, but you're always going to need to make sure you've got that basic skill set covered so that you can convey this stuff. Because this is like really showing the placement of things on stage in a very literal sense. And this is where you then start to troubleshoot stuff of like, oh, well, that path really can't be a foot wide because people have to walk through that. We really need it to be at least 2.5 feet wide or whatever it is. So I find that ground plans can go through a couple different versions before you get to the final one. If you have a ground plan that has moving scenery in it, you're going to have multiple ground plans as well. So ground plan is not like one and done. You're kind of like thinking of it as like a revised living document in a way until that design deadline is due. And even when you hand it to the technical director, they may be like, did you really mean to like design it or, you know, put this over here? And you'll be like, no, I didn't. And then you move it. So that idea of elevations again, and kind of, because there's kind of this kind of straight, kind of black and white kind of line elevation. And then there's something called painter's elevations. So this kind of depends a little bit on the theater you're in and the production as well. Because if you are maybe turning in construction drawings to your technical director, you're going to aim a little bit more for kind of this line drawing kind of stuff so they can literally see how it all fits together. If you're at a theater that has a scenic painter or a charge artist, for you, you're going to want to make sure that you have painter's elevations so that they have something to go from. It's pretty common at some of the mid-sized theaters around town. You're going to be generally painting your own sets, So that's kind of then your own call to a certain degree, kind of your relationship with your technical director, like how much of this do you need to flush out ahead of time? Because there's been a couple shows where, like, if I know I'm painting it and I've done the model and I know what my process is in my head, I haven't necessarily done painter's elevations. But if I'm handing it over to someone, again, think of it as that communication tool where you're giving it to some, like, I usually think of it as, like, if I win the lottery and I don't come back to Tech Week, here is what I intended. So you really want to kind of think of this in terms of, like, if I have to walk away from this production for whatever reason, what is critical that someone else can pick this up and run with it? And that sometimes thinking of it that way, like, can really help clarify, like, what is really important to you to, like, leave in notes like this, so that you are really clear to whoever is reading that document. Models. I love models. They're so much fun. I've got two small wiener dogs, so I just think I like things in miniature sometimes. So models can be kind of whatever you need them to be the best communication tool. Sometimes something like a white model is something all that you need, and maybe you pair a white model with like paint elevations so that you're getting kind of the general feel of the space and the set, and then you've got your painter's elevations that's got the color. And then sometimes you've got just like these very like stunning kinds of models that really just make it 100% clear what that set is really going to look like. You can also see between these things that there's a very different kind of time commitment that goes into this model compared to this model or this model. So again, when you're designing, as I've said kind of before, you're making a series of decisions to tell the best story. That decision also goes through with, you know, what's the best tool that I can make to help execute this as well. If you're in a production where you like literally need to put this in front of a director for them to understand it, you know, that's something you gotta kind of have a conversation to figure that out. But you might have a director who looks at this and is like, yeah, great, got it, we can run with that. Or, you know, the technical director is like, great, I got it, let's go. So that's kind of a balancing act sometimes too. Sometimes that's dictated by your contract as well. So there's plenty of contracts that I've done where it's like, you will have ground plan, and it says either painter's elevations or a model. There's some that say you will have a model. It all kind of depends on the theater, depends on the needs of the production. Make sure you're talking about it. Don't just assume, because we know what assuming does. So here's kind of that idea of renderings. Again, that idea that you're capturing like a feel to something. I find that something like this is very helpful when you're talking with like your lighting designer to make sure that you two are on the same page, because you can see that like this show, which I'm pretty sure is Death of a Salesman, versus this show have two very different feels and very different atmospheres to them. And you can see how this has an atmospheric feel that may not be captured the way that you can in a model, because that's kind of what you're, you know, that's that storytelling element. It's that feel. It's almost hard to describe because you're talking about feelings in some ways. Nowadays, we also have lots of different kind of computer-generated drafting softwares. It's really, you know, whatever works best for you. Some people like to kick it old school and do the watercolor stuff, but other people who are like, hey, I've got to do like four set designs in a month because that's my job, they might be doing the computer generated stuff, so they can be sitting in a Tech Week generating, you know, draftings for their show that's, you know, coming up later. So that's just kind of an example of the range of different kind of rendering styles too, because that kind of reflects you as a designer as well. So research is something that I find is kind of actually critical. Definitely upfront in the process, but in a lot of ways throughout as well, to kind of make sure that you're kind of fact-checking yourself. Like, there's definitely going to be a lot of, like, upfront research, especially when you're talking with your other designers, making sure that you're all kind of sharing the same imagery and stuff like that. Research comes in many forms. We've got the internet, obviously. I know I've got a stack of books at home that, you know, it's hard to come by some books nowadays that kind of, or, you know, it's hard to the internet, there are some very specific things that you just can't find on the internet. So there's some books that I just have in my book shelf that I know, like, really liked that one show, so I'm going to keep that book. And then also firsthand research as well. The example that, like, firsthand research that I just kind of, you know, when you're out in the world kind of experiencing things, like, I think I went on a trip to London this last fall. That's kind of a firsthand experience that you're taking in that information in a way that, and you're holding on to it differently than, like, internet or books. And that firsthand research comes in a huge variety of ways. It's not just travel. But it isn't literally just, like, sitting down and, like, reading things. Sometimes it is, like, no, go out and, like, experience it, whatever it is. You know, if you're trying to, like, if you're doing the musical State Fair, go to the State Fair and, like, figure that out. Or, you know, if you haven't been to the State Fair. I don't know how that's possible in Minnesota, but that's a different conversation. And then for set design, research can be visual, but then also historical as well. Because obviously this is a very visual experience, so you want to make sure that you're capturing, you know, what things should, like, literally look like. When I was a younger designer, I was really good at, like, thinking I knew what, like, the historical thing was and then doing it, and then my professors would be like, you don't actually know what you're doing. Like, you can't go off the road if you don't know what the road is. So that's where some historical research is important, because if you're going to deviate from something, kind of got to know why you're deviating. How does that enhance the story? So kind of know what you're going for, and why it's different, how it's different. Going from there. So I've kind of talked about a variety of different things at this point, so I kind of just kind of like to do a little snapshot, recapping the phases of set design. So generally reading and research is kind of the upfront kind of part of it. I know right now I've got like two or three scripts that I just like have on my couch right now, so that like when I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay, got it. You know, you're doing the reading and research. It's just kind of a different phase of the process. Then you have kind of the design concept, which is typically with the director. Different processes are different. Sometimes it's, you know, maybe you and the lighting designer. Maybe the concept is the producer and the director. You know, it can kind of take a different form, but generally you've got to have a concept to be able to run with. Then you start to realize details. So sometimes, you know, that is, you know, when you're talking about design concept, you might start be making those realized decisions even in that first conversation when you're talking about blocking. When you start generating that ground plan, when you start making those paint elevations, I've never like just sat down in a weekend, just like cranked out a whole show. Some designers do because they're really talented like that. But I always call that realizing details kind of a phase, because you start with more of an idea and then you start to solidify things throughout a process of conversations. So there's, you know, kind of all this kind of conceptual work up front. You know, somewhere, you know, in here you've got your design deadlines so that the TD can start doing what they need to do. I know for myself, when rehearsal starts, there's a huge amount of work, at least in the set, that has already gone into that show by the time first rehearsal happens, because you definitely need to make sure your ground plan is done so that they can do their blocking. But, you know, at that point, you might already have your model. So a lot of your work may be done as a designer. So when I'm talking about how different design areas have different cadences and rhythms, that's kind of what I'm talking about. Because the set, you're creating that the world that the actors live in. And that's not true for every production. Sometimes you'll do like collaborative processes where you're maybe more a part of the rehearsal process. You kind of build that as you go. I would call this maybe a little bit more kind of a traditional structure, but there are definitely you know, different collaborative processes that veer from that as well. So then you have the rehearsal process. So it really depends on the show, it depends on the director, it depends on your cast, how much information you get from rehearsal, how many changes are made, that kind of stuff. Because I've done some shows where they're in rehearsal and I don't hear boo. And I'm like, okay, that must have been good, awesome. And then there's some shows where I'm like, every rehearsal report, I'm like, how do they have more questions? How is this happening to me right now? But all the questions are very good, because you want to have those questions up front rather than getting into tech week. Then you have Loden. And for myself, as a set designer, I usually sometimes think of Loden as a little bit more stressful than Tech Week in some ways, because that's when you're really like, okay, we've got the plan is gonna happen now. So that's when you're like moving all the scenery around. And that's where like you just like literally see it materialize in front of you. So that, you know, that for me is like the week where I'm like really involved in there. Because that's also where some questions can come up where you're like, how did we get this far in the process and we didn't think of this? Or, you know, that kind of stuff. So by the time you get to Tech Week, generally speaking, your set is pretty much built. There might be paint treatments and stuff going on, but generally, once you get to Tech, you need to make sure that the set is safe enough for people to walk on and be able to get their work done. Sometimes that, you know, there is very tight load-in time, so that just gets a little tough, and you have to have very specific conversations, maybe with your director and stage manager, to say, Monday the platforms will be in, Tuesday the walls will be up, because, you know, sometimes there's compressed load-in and techniques going on. So the key there is communication so that everyone's on the same page, so you don't get to Tech Week and they're like, I didn't know there was a wall there. So you get through Tech Week, hopefully it gets easier each day. You have less notes each day, that's always the goal. And then you get into more of maintaining the run of the show. So this again kind of depends on the show itself. That's kind of a pattern that I've been saying a lot. It depends on the show. Because there's some shows where maintaining it, there's nothing. If it's a British Drawing Room, they're probably not, you know, being really hard on that set. But there's been some set floors in here that I've had to come in and between weekends have to like touch up the floor. Because like shows that have like fights and sword fights in them are notorious for scuffing up floors. So I know if I, you know, that's a kind of when you're talking about, you know, that design concept phase. And if, you know, Three Musketeers is a great example. Treasure Island is a great example of, you know, going into that, that's going to be, you know, very intense work on the floor. So that's something, you know, depending on, again, the designer technical director relationship, you know, that it's not just like opening night and done. There might be some maintenance to make sure that that maintains the integrity of the show. And then finally, eventually, you get to strike. And that's where you take everything down. And somehow I always like forget that you have to like return your rentals, not literally, but I'm always like, oh yeah, I have to schedule that. So just because opening happens doesn't mean you're done. Depending on the contract you're on sometimes, it might mean you're done because it might be the technical director that takes care of that stuff. Those are the kinds of things that you want to make sure that you have conversations with. I know I've done some shows with, you know, kind of some of the smaller nomadic kind of companies that maybe kind of go from place to place to place. And strike is like a different process. Like there was one show where I was like, oh, no one thought to get a dumpster. All right, we got to figure that out right now. But that kind of troubleshooting kind of process, because I had kind of like checked out mentally on that show, and then I got to strike, and I was like, whoa, should not have checked out when I did, but that happened. We ended up putting stuff in everyone's cars, and they put it in their own trashes that way. Budget, it ranges. It's really hard to say. Stick within your budget. just do that. When I'm saying kind of, you know, you're making design decisions to appropriately fit, you know, the scope of the show that you're working on, budget is usually one of the biggest indicators to be like, oh, it's, you know, this size show versus this size show, because that's how much money you have to work with. Sometimes budget can be a dictator of, you know, kind of, you know, whether you accept a show or not. Because kind of along the same lines of like, I make sure I read a script before taking on work, I ask what the budget is too. Because I'll generally say, give me the script, what's the budget, what are the deadlines? And if they want this huge musical on $200, I'm like, okay, so let's clarify something here for a second. Like, is this the direction you're going in? And if they're like, no, we want all this stuff, I'll be like, bye, find a different designer. You know, those are the things you know for yourself to make it a good thing. So it also depends on the theater you're at. Some theaters, the designers really kind of kept up to date on budgets. some theaters, it's like totally the technical director, and you don't even have to sweat it. They'll just say, this costs this much, this costs this much, this costs this much, you can decide, and we'll do it. So it kind of depends on how that theater's set up and what those kind of expectations are, who you're all working with. Safety, my favorite. So one thing that I always keep in mind when we're talking about set stuff is that kind of the difference with like a set versus a prop is that sometimes with a set, you're building things that people are walking on or under, or you're hanging really heavy things up there. So, and like, I love set design because it's like the art that is like in relation to the human form, like kind of love that kind of feel, but also like you're building something huge. You gotta be smart about it. Moving scenery, always something that you wanna make sure that you're really, you know, depending on how it's moving, is it automated? Who's moving it? You know, it that can be for the techs as well. Like, if they kind of get some kind of injury from moving scenery, that's not safe either. So, you know, you want to make sure that you're kind of thinking through kind of safety in all aspects, not just what's on stage, but backstage as well. OSHA, thrilling readings, but, you know, worth it on a nice rainy afternoon if you're ever up for it. MSDS sheets, material safety data sheets, are something that you should, if you're going to in a shop and you're like, I don't know what chemical you're using on that piece of scenery, or like, I don't know if we should combine these two chemicals together, you know, that's always something that you legally, like, if you ask a company, you have to send me the MSDS sheet of your product, they have to send it to you. So be smart. It's just not worth like taking a risk to get something done and then breathing in some toxic fumes. It's just not worth it. Safety equipment, you know, that's gonna range from, you know, goggles, particle masks, respirators, gloves, you know, just be smart. Think smarter, not harder, when you're thinking about this stuff. Because really, genuinely, like, however great that play is, it's not worth, like, losing a finger over. And then, I always like to keep this in mind, kind of another one of my mantras. As we've talked about budget and safety, you know, all those time pressures, the time frames. You can have something good, you can have something cheap, you can have it fast. Those are three things, but you can pick two of them, generally, when you're working on a show. Because it may be fast and cheap, but is it good? Is it good and cheap, but is it fast? Because it maybe is like you like individually stenciling stuff or something like that. So sometimes when I'm like trying to make a decision, I think of this as well, just as a way to kind of formalize my thinking a little bit. Just to reiterate what I've said kind of throughout, we all have different strengths. You know, the more that you can learn about yourself as a designer, the more that you help yourself, the more that you help the other designers and directors you're working with, and the more that you can help tell better stories in the end. Because I know I gave the example, I'm not very good at abstract stuff. So sometimes, you know, saying like, no, I'm really not the best designer for this is a good thing. That's not a bad thing. So it's important to know your strengths. So then, you're all very inspired right now. I can feel it. How do I get started? Networking is always important. This is an industry of who you know. And there's ways to network outside of taking on shows. Taking on shows is like ultimately, yes, the goal, but it is a very large time commitment when you're doing a show. So there's ways to network, you know, outside of, you know, taking on that huge thing so that you can broaden your network without, you know, kind of laterally while still kind of developing those skills, if that makes sense. A portfolio is really, really, really important. We live in a visual world as designers, so you need to be able to have visual things to, like, show that. Nowadays, like, in college, like, we went through all the design portfolio every year. I had a big portfolio, like, this big. Used it once, now it's in my basement in my parents' house. Websites is where it's at, because you can put that right on your resume. You can shoot it off in an email. And it's really easy to take a picture and then just upload it to your website. So I really, really, if thinking of it as a website is like scary, think of it just as like an online portfolio. Because I know, like, when you're like, oh, I have to get a website, does that mean I have to get a domain name? No, I don't have a domain name. There's lots of free websites out there. Use whichever interface works best for you, because you're the one that's going to be updating it. So, like, work with what works with your brain. Don't try and, like, work with a software. You're like, I don't get it. Just pick a different one. Attending classes and workshops like this is a great way to get started. And I really think it's important to learn the other areas around you. If there's a show that you want to work on and the set is already got a designer assigned to it, but they still got a props person available, do the props. Do the assistant to the set designer, assist the costumer, you know, be an ASM, be a light board op, because those are the experience, you know, watching the process is as much of a learning experience as doing the process. And it'll make you a better designer as well, because you're like, oh, I remember that one time I was on run crew and they designed that really stupid thing with that really stupid break. I'm never doing that. That was really bad. You know, those are the kinds of things that you can't get by not doing it, if that makes sense. That is that. I can show you folks around the building a little bit if you're interested. I can show you the scene shop, I can show you the booth up there. We've got a prop area downstairs as well. Bobby is one of our regular props designers here, so if you have any questions as well, Bobby's a good person that's got a lot of good experience here at the theater. Otherwise, let me know if you're interested in, you know, getting on any kind of build crew, paint crew. If you want to take on designing a show, you know, I help mentor designers as well. If you've never done this before, that's totally fine. I can help you through it, kind of give you some guidance. We want to give you those opportunities. So if you're interested in anything, let me know. Any questions that we can field before we start by heading at the scene shop?
Now, have you talked about two questions? First one, talk about Treasure Island and how you as a set designer, I was the props designer of the show, as a costume designer, mm-hmm. and we actually met before we met the director and worked up the steampunk concept.
Mm-hmm. Treasure Island was a beautiful production, if I do say so myself. It's on my website. But it was a really good example of a show where, you know, the visual designers all had to be on the same page together, especially when you're trying to do something like steampunk like that. You need to make sure, like, okay, when I say steampunk, I mean this. You need to make sure you're all on that same page so that when, you know, you're talking about things, you're not talking about two different things, but you think you're talking about the same thing at the same time. Those are also the opportunities where, you know, just letting the ideas fly is so important sometimes, not just jumping straight to solutions. I look back at that process of Treasure Island, and I've never had such a process where I just let myself be creative first. And then I said, okay, how can I make it happen? And it's because we had those conversations as designers to really establish that language, establish that world together, and then we actually took it to the director and said, we think this is a really great way to do this. And that's kind of what worked with that director specifically, kind of that collaborative style. So that's kind of knowing what your director is kind of open to, because I've definitely had directors be like, nope, I want a wagon, I want it to be black and white. And I'm like, you can make all the other decisions. And I'm like, okay, I can do that. But then there's things like Treasure Island where you're given kind of a different level of autonomy on the storytelling in a way. So there's kind of a range of what that looks like. Did that help answer that? Describe that a little bit? Any other questions?
Second question, dealing as a designer with a director who won't acknowledge budget limitations.
Oh, everyone's favorite, right? So in general, I remember like graduating from college and being like, oh, I learned all these technical skills, this is great. And I remember being like working through my senior thesis and then talking with my professors and being like, but how do you work with directors? And they were like, bye, have fun at graduation. it's really difficult because it is such a technical skill and interpersonal skill. And a lot of times with interpersonal skills, the only way to practice it is to be in those situations. You know, it's not like drafting where you can sit and draft that thing 100 times until you've got that line perfectly. It's not like rendering where you can sit and practice watercolor for hours. You know, it's a little different because you've got to have that interpersonal interaction with someone to really kind of figure it out. And I've been there. I did a show. It was props for it specifically. And by the end of the week, the director had added 25 props in about 4 days of rehearsal. So part of that is first, you know, being aware of like, A, what were the expectations up front? I'm a really big fan of making sure like clear expectations and workloads are important. So that, you know, through the rehearsal process, if that changes, you have a certain amount of autonomy to be like, no, at the production meeting, like this is what we talked about. You know, at the production meeting, we said the design deadline was here for a good reason. We're not changing stuff now at this point in the game. So that's also why I think of a lot of these things as communication tools. You know, if you think you're getting into kind of like a scary director situation, like maybe you like legit, like in a production meeting, just have them like sign off on the design concept so you can be like, nope, you signed it. We agreed to it. This is what we're doing. You know, so that you kind of build some of those things in for yourself. Hopefully you're at a theater where you have someone that is maybe above even the director that is kind of in your corner at the same time. That show where I had 25 props added in a week, you know, I said, hey, this is kind of a flag for me. We need to talk about this. Director blew me off straight to the production manager. I was like, this cannot happen with this budget. You can have this, this, or this, but you can't have all three. You get to decide now what that is. And, you know, that process did get to a point by Tech Week. I was like, I'm not taking any notes from this director. You can funnel them through the production manager, and then I will do the notes, but I am not talking to you directly. And, like, sometimes you just got to know yourself to know, like, if that's what it takes for me to maintain my sanity, do it, because it's not worth losing your marbles for because someone else is not cooperating in the communication process. So, good question.
Yeah, I would ask a question about the skills that an aspiring set designer should pretty much have, like the ability to make these little cardboard models and to generate computer representations of what the creation will look like.
Yeah, so I know for myself, like I'm a little bit more old school in that I like to do a lot of stuff by hand still. There's a lot of designers out there that are above and beyond me when it comes to like the software stuff for sure. A certain amount of that comes from a certain amount of practice, but you've got to have one of those things, kind of one of those technical things to be able to communicate your ideas. And when I think of it that way as like, I need to be able to build my model to communicate this idea, it scares me less sometimes. Because even sometimes when I'm like, oh my God, I'm designing this whole set, it freaks me out too. I'm like, how am I going to get this done in this time frame? But it's kind of like you don't eat an elephant in one sitting. You eat it one chunk at a time. So I know I've got a show right now where I'm actually making two different models to really kind of convey two different paint treatments and like the effect that paint treatment would have, which I've never done two models for a show before, never. But kind of the demands of the show are such that I know that that's a good choice to be able to showcase that kind of a thing. And the level of model building, you know, isn't that one that was like all the beautiful decorative garbage hanging everywhere. It's a little bit simpler because I'm trying to hone in on a specific aspect of what I'm trying to convey. I'm trying to convey the paint treatment, so I'm not, you know, really focusing in on, is this a 90-degree angle? It will be a 90-degree angle, I know that, but for this model right now, the important thing is the paint treatment, because that's what we're discussing, that's what we're discussing.
Yeah, or like a multi-level stage or something, you need to represent that, Sophie.
Yeah, you gotta like, you kinda gotta get in your mojo sometimes, like just turn on Netflix and just be ready to make like lots of little tiny things, too. So,
yeah. Using
the
big 2 out of 3
section. Yeah. I don't a lot. I, you know, kind of upfront, I'm kind of in that kind of mid-level theater, Like, and I know, like, if I wanted to go up further, I'd have to do some of that computer-generated stuff. It's a variety of different reasons. One, it's 2018, so, like, everything is done on computers. There's free software out there. There's Google SketchUp. I do have training in... Oh, everyone just, like, pulled out their notebooks right there. I do have training in AutoCAD. I know St. Paul College in St. Paul has some great classes in AutoCAD that are pretty reasonably priced. And there's, you know, theater classes that are geared towards drafting, and then there's architectural kind of engineering kinds of things that are geared towards drafting. So if you go down that path of some kind of formal software training, just double check what you're kind of getting into. I'm the kind of person where I would be like, you know, I wouldn't be opposed to like just taking like a super intense drafting class, but you'd have to be in the mindset of like, okay, I'm learning it through this lens of like engineering. But then sometimes learning it through a different lens really teaches you a lot of different things that you wouldn't have otherwise caught up on. Google SketchUp is a really popular one for free stuff. AutoCAd, Vectorworks are kind of the traditional kind of mainstream kinds of things. And then, you know, a certain amount of that computer drafting also goes with your lighting designer as well. Generally, lighting can be done with software as well, laying out the plot and everything. And when you've got a, you know, a software program, your design deadline is just emailing a file to someone instead of like, here's all my stuff, here you go. So there's definitely pros and cons to both. So because I know like I do quite a bit of hand drafting still, so I like doing that, but that limits me from being the designer that can sit in tech and, you know, do all that stuff. It's partly kind of a financial decision in some ways too, because you've got to pay for that software. Because it's 2018 and you have to pay for it annually. You don't just pay for it on a CD like in the old days. So, you know, there's really truly pros and cons to both. I know part of the reason I like doing stuff by hand is it helps me think through stuff differently so that when I'm handing it off to a technical director, I can be like, what do you think about this? How are you thinking about building this? You know, because that's just my process and that's how my brain works. Everyone's brain is different. So, yeah. Does that answer that question?
I make models for everything for musical productions, so then the director too can, yeah, you move it here, you move it here. They have a better sense than just a drawing.
Yeah.
If you do every way, you can.
I think like musicals and like moving scenery, it's really important to have a model because you can be like, oh, these two just can't sit next to each other. Or, you know, you have to move one.
And then we're adding 40 dancers.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm doing one now that we added within budget, and the choreographer says she wants levels for her dancers.
Yeah. That is actually something that I didn't include in the who you'll work with, but truly, like, your fight choreographer and your dance choreographer, if you're doing a fight-heavy show or a musical, are very important people, because you're talking about the spacing and the layout. There's definitely been musicals that I've worked on where you definitely have those conversations.
So now my ground role is actually standing on.
Yeah. So that's definitely because you're talking about the space and the movement, so you need to make sure you're taking all those kinds of perspectives and opinions into account.
And then I didn't check whether I said, if we use 4-foot step, we're over budget. How much room do you need back and forth?
Mm-hmm.
If we're doing 3-foot or 32 inches, we'll save
exactly
so much
stuff. Like,
40-foot, 50-foot stage, we'll save a lot of money.
Yeah, because, you know, depending on the dance move that they envision, they might need 6 feet instead of 4 feet. So, good things to discuss in a production meeting, not technique.
Well, in technical drawings done on a computer, I often see are misinterpreted by the director a lot more often than models or a physical ground plan.
Yep.
They just don't get the depth perception.
Yeah, because, like, everyone has different, like, strengths, right? Like someone who's not kind of like trained to look at like what does this line mean, they're gonna look at this and they're gonna be like, why are all these lines on stage? And it's like, actually those are line sets and they're dashed because they're above your head. So, you know, exactly, you know, communication tool, cater to the audience that you're trying to convey things to. Because, you know, trying to then suddenly teach a director, oh, well, you know, this line is the proscenium line, so the set isn't going to stick out beyond the curtain. You know, that's just, you know, in some ways just not effective. It's not a good use of time for anyone.
And some community theaters, too, sometimes they'll have their orchestra pit backstage, mm-hmm. so you got that to contend with. It's a two-story.
Yeah. Yeah, generally, like, musicals just have more things in them to account for.
I do have a question. I wasn't able to see one kind of the shade. How did they do that here? Did
they
have a small orchestra?
So we call this tunnel bomb right here where this corner is. They turned that into a gazebo where the musicians then like hung out. And that's also like a good example of like, musical at Theater in the Round, what does that mean?
Right, I wanted to see.
Does it mean like I need to find space for 7 butts and a piano to sit someplace, or is it just a piano? Right?
Right.
Like, because then there's also done musicals where we just have a piano player up there. So then that's kind of a different kind of scenic decision as well of like, well, is that just literally a dude in a piano and we're just like pretending he's not there, or do you make that area pretty up there? So yeah, good questions. Anything else? Want to go look at the scene chart and the props and stuff like that? Okay. And if you do want to go, you don't have to come look at it.
My reason for coming here actually is because I've oftentimes been talking to people and they start talking about how the set's going, it's like, and I need to kind of
hear that understanding
of set design from a prop standpoint, you know, because oftentimes they're asking for recommendations and I'm like, so that's kind of my reason for doing this. I'm actually, I don't come from the theater world, I come from the photography world.
Okay.
I'd be interested to talk to you more if you're more of a prop person.
Okay. I base almost exclusively in theater.
And I'm one of the few buildings that actually does that's why I have my choice.
Do you prefer to build?
Okay, do you have the other part as well? I didn't bring it.
Okay. If you could email me your project, because I also get requests from customers looking for something built.
Okay.
And I have built.
Okay.
So I would definitely send those
in. And I'm real quick. Okay. Yeah, I do a lot of building, and I like to build out of other existing product. To me, that's true recycling, right?
Right.
I can take anything. Case in point, I did a show theater, come back to the fire and I was going to get here. Show requires a wooden brush club machine.
then we're back up here. It's very confusing. So those are some of the highlights. I'll keynote if anyone has any questions about anything, if you want to get involved at Theater in the Road or anything like that. But otherwise, thanks for coming today. I appreciate it. It's kind of nice to have something like this on a day when it's kind of cold and gross outside. So instead of thinking like, oh, I wish it was nice inside. So I was just saying that's kind of all that I have to show. So if you have any questions, I'll just kind of hang out. Otherwise, you know, we also, in the back lobby there, we always have a gallery of photos. So if you want to check out the stuff back there in the gallery as well, you can do that. Otherwise, I'm just here for questions.
Here's my latest model for Pirates.
Oh, that's great.
Of course, they were spending $900 on a mattress.
Oh,
that cut into my
that's a big chunk of the time, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I have to make models like that.
Yeah, and see, that's just like great because sometimes that's like what you need.
Yeah, and a little ship that goes across during the on-track.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, because the director lives in North Dakota. I've never been to this theater. It's one that they rent to high school. It's going to be at Osso. It's cross community.
Oh, okay.
Maple Grove Community Theater. So I've never been to the place. Send me these drawings.
That's always fun.
It doesn't make sense. And the director's in North Dakota. So.
It was the Tudor style line drawing that you had on there.
Okay, I'll see you later.
See you, Gordy. It was good to see you again. There it is.
Hey, Gordy.
Yeah, go for it.
Oops. I
just
heard you talking about Pirates of Penzance.
Yeah.
I'm the master carpenter.
You are?
Yes.
Excellent.
So,
I was going to try
to talk to you.
Yeah,
you were a little bit late.
I was.
I'll give you my email address if you ever have any questions. It's Sadie K. Ward, SADIEKWARD, at gmail.com.
I'm sure Kelly can
tell
you.
I am.
Good questions. I know that you always catch me. For my senior project next semester, I'm designing every aspect of the show, and I'm going to actually present it as an exhibition. That's cool. I will admit I have little to no knowledge of set designing,
but that's the important thing, though, to jump right into it. Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
That's just funny.
So I don't know.
Just a button.
Either make these two look one at the glass, or you can do some screens and shape it that way. You can just hold on to your hand.
There is, in college, I did the costume design stuff.
I did costume design and my sort.
Yeah, and so, you know, I, at this point, I would be like, I feel lucky I can dress myself some days, so I should not be dressing other people. But having that experience, Viterbo and the Cross Wisconsin. It's getting there. I didn't
sure. I mean, I can get your phone
number. Okay.
Are you from across?
No, I'm actually, I grew up in Imbergrove Heights, which is a suburb up here.
Yep.
So I actually started volunteering here at Theater in the Round the summer right after I graduated high school. So, coming to the big city.
Exactly.
And what I was going to ask is if you could just make it full screen like it was for the presentation. I'm sorry to be.
Oh, we are just fine.
Okay.
There.
Yeah.